Hello, and welcome to episode 0.5 of EPLT Radio, the official podcast of the Office of External Programs and Learning Technologies at UBC. That's EPLT for short. I'm Dave Roy, Senior Program Assistant for the Master of Educational Technology Program, or MET for short, which is administered by EPLT.
And I am Sharon Hu. I am the Instructional Designer at EPLT. Hello, everyone out there in podcast land.
Each episode, I originally said week, but we might be biweekly, we'll be bringing you the latest information about EPLT, our programs, students, faculty, basically anything that's going on in this place we like to call home for 35 hours a week. We'll talk to students about what they're learning in their programs and projects they would like to showcase, instructors about their thoughts regarding both their courses and education in general, or maybe somebody who is working in the education field. And hopefully many more surprises.
Good surprises, I hope.
Oh, certainly will be, though. If not, we'll just edit them out. So what exactly is EPLT? EPLT is a unit in the Faculty of Education here at UBC that allows departments in the faculty to offer courses and programs in unique ways. We offer online undergraduate courses, Master of Education cohorts in locations from Vancouver to Surrey to Vancouver Island, as well as online. Undergraduate diploma and certificate programs, summer institutes, and we also administer the MET program for the faculty. We are not an academic unit within the faculty, I can't stress that enough, but we work with academic units to get their courses and programs out there. We are sort of a liaison between the faculty and the teaching community.
So, Dave, when you say we're not an academic unit within the faculty, what does that mean?
Basically, that means we have no academic authority. We are basically just the administration aspect of it, and all academic issues are handled in the department itself.
So we don't really have our own structures or our own courses?
Not really. We do not. All the courses that we offer are courses that are done by the departments.
Oh, okay.
So we just handle all of the administration issues.
I really should know that since I work here.
You're involved in the back end, the actual design of putting all these courses online, so it's understandable.
Okay.
I'm sure you're probably wondering, why is EPLT doing a podcast? That is a very good question. On my daily commute, I listen to quite a few podcasts of various types, from video games to history and politics. It suddenly hit me one day that this might be fun to do for our office. I've always wanted to be on the radio. So we're proud of the work that we do, bringing UBC's Faculty of Education to those of you who are in the field, and we wanted to explore another avenue for getting that out to you. There are some wonderful students taking the programs we administer, awesome instructors teaching in them, and fascinating things that are happening in the field. We want to draw your attention to some of them and hopefully have a little fun in the process. And Sharon, you were kind of instrumental in helping me shape this idea and getting it produced.
Yeah, you know, I have to say I was pleasantly surprised when you brought up the idea. I think it was one of those things that has always intrigued me. I mean, I subscribe to a number of podcasts, but I never thought, hey, maybe we can do one. So, you know, it's great that you took the initiative and you actually thought we could do one. Because if it wasn't for you, I would have never have come up with this idea.
Well, the dream kind of started percolating about 6 months ago, and I was beginning to wonder if I was ever going to actually have the courage to bring it up, so I'm glad we did.
Yeah.
And you are listening to the result of that. Basically, the podcast is going to be divided into three, maybe four segments. We have this beginning part. We're going to try to bring you an interview every episode, and then a segment afterwards with just discussion of an issue either in education or in educational technology. This one is being produced totally in-house as we are just kind of getting started. And so our first interview subject is Mark Bachman, who is the MET manager of the MET program, and also the marketing person for both MET and for EPLT. He basically does all our programs. And through the miracles of podcasting techniques, this interview was actually done a couple weeks ago. So here we go. We're speaking now with Mark Bachman, the manager of the Master of Educational Technology program and the marketing manager for EPLT. Mark's been with EPLT since December 2009, replacing Heather McGregor, who is off on leave. So how are you doing today, Mark?
Well, good.
I understand that you came here to Vancouver from Ontario right before taking the position. How are you liking Vancouver?
Oh, I like it a lot. I've been here, actually this month, I've been here exactly a year, and I'm living downtown and just loving it.
Excellent. Vancouver is definitely an excellent city to live in.
There's a lot to do, and everything's within walking distance, which is nice.
And that's a definite plus. So, Mark, what is it exactly you do for the MET program, and what other things do you do for EPLT?
For the MET program, I'm basically an administrator, and I handle the back-end things like hiring instructors, posting new positions, making sure everyone gets paid on time, things like that. I also do some promotion for it, online and print and so on. And that ties in with the EPLT work that I do. For EPLT programs like off-campus master's programs or online courses or summer institutes, I do promotion.
And what sort of promotion or what methods of promotion do you use?
Most of our courses and programs are targeted towards teachers, and so a lot of it is just getting announcements out to schools and districts in BC. Some of our programs are broader, either because they're online or because the subject matter is more general. And so in those cases, we would go, for example, in publications in other provinces, or we do advertising through Google, you know, Google keywords advertising, things like that.
And what would you say has been the most effective for the various programs? Is Google pretty high on the list as far as
Yeah, actually, Google brings in a lot of traffic, like especially for the MET program. If we track the stats and we look where we're getting our visits to the website from, Google is usually near the top. For some of the other programs, especially master's programs directed towards teachers, we get a lot of response to announcements that go out through professional development coordinators. We get a lot of response when we send out, for example, an email blitz or let's say something to a listserv. I think that's because they can respond immediately. We can put a link in the announcement, and if someone's interested, they can go right to the web page.
Oh, okay. So what do you think of when you think of educational technology, since you were responsible for the MET program? What does that term mean to you, and would that affect your marketing strategies for any kind of ed tech program?
Yeah, I think there are the two parts. I mean, the one part is technology, and that's the nuts and bolts of how do you do things, you know, learning a new application, learning how to deal with software, you know, where does this end of the cord or the cable plug in, things like that. And the other part is the educational part, what can you do with it? Because I think sometimes teachers and, I mean, people in general aren't aware of all the possibilities. You know, you can put together a discussion group, and that discussion group can include your class, but it can also include students from, you know, Europe or Africa or in Australia. And you can put together a wiki where you can all collaborate on a project, or you can put together a Google Doc where everyone can contribute content, or you can, you know, create a video profile of the class, for example. I mean, I think that's maybe the more important part. Right now, we're still, you know, in the early stages of applying digital technology and online technology to the classroom, to education. But eventually, that's going to be second nature. And then the real challenge is going to be figuring out great ways to apply it.
So do you see mixed mode online and face-to-face courses kind of becoming more and more?
Yeah, that's already happening. I mean, there used to be a very sharp division between, you know, face-to-face courses and instruction and online instruction. And I think that distinction is disappearing because, even if you're teaching a classroom-based course, you can supplement it with online resources and so on. And I mean, you can disseminate information, you can post class notes, lecture notes, and so on. So it makes sense just because it lets you do so much more.
So the MET program has been constantly expanding, for many years, not just this year, but in the past years too. Constantly growing enrollment, increasing number of applications to it. What do you think attracts people to higher education online programs, and why do you think that market is growing?
I think convenience. I mean, people are busy, their schedules are tight, and with the online programs, they're not as tied to a particular time slot. And so that's one attraction. Another is that it's accessible from anywhere. I mean, we have students in the MET program from, you know, close to 30 countries around the world at any one time. I think that's true. And and so, you know, someone living in an area where they might have no options otherwise can now access a high-level master's program because it's online. So I think that's a big part of the appeal.
And is it the convenience factor? I guess the reason I'm wondering is that we have a large number of people in the Lower Mainland taking the MET program, and even though they could come to campus.
Yeah.
But is it just a convenience that they just don't have to?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, convenience can be that you're living in the middle of a no man's land in, you know, some undeveloped area, and this lets you access education, but it can also be that you don't have to get in the car and drive for 45 minutes after a hard day's work to get to a classroom.
Fighting rush hour traffic.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, convenience means a lot of things, and online programs answer those needs.
So what challenges do you find in marketing higher education programs like the MET program?
Well, I think one challenge would be that educational technology is still about the technology, right? You still have to be a bit of a geek and a bit of a techie to feel comfortable with it. And one challenge, I think, is to get past that and to start saying to sort of non-tech people that this is an area for you to look at too. You know, look at the possibilities, look at what you can do with it, and how amazing are the things that are possible now in the classroom and what your students can do with it. And forget about but put aside for a moment the technological challenges, because once you get past the initial hurdle, it's not that complicated. And then focus on all the new options that it opens up. I think that's one thing.
And one of my favorite areas to explore that I'm trying to do more and more with EPLT is the use of social media. How do you think social media can be used for both implementing higher education programs as well as marketing them?
Yeah, I think, that's an area I need to learn a lot more about. And in that sense, I'm probably like a lot of teachers. We're vaguely aware of what's out there, and we're vaguely aware of what can be done with it, but we need to do a lot more. And I think some of the advantages are, for example, collaboration. You can work together a lot more, not just within the classroom time, but outside. And another possibility that it opens up is that you have access to far more resources provided by far more people than in the past. And so I think we need to look at how we're going to draw on all those possibilities.
As far as using social media in the programs, one of the aspects that I really like is being able to go cross-platform, like using, having one thing for both Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. You can have your Twitter your tweets, posted to Facebook and to LinkedIn and everything. And so do you see that kind of cross-pollination of social media as being valuable for both marketing and in the programs themselves?
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a perception sometimes that online courses are more isolating and that you somehow get less than you would in a face-to-face course, less interaction, less contact with your professor, less contact with other students. And in practice, I think actually you get more because you're discussing with students through online forums. You can have contact with your prof during the week, between classes, even when, you know, you can post a message and he can reply, so you're not limited to the 2 hours of office time that are available during that week. So I think maybe that's a misconception that has to be battled against, that you're getting less with an online course. In fact, you're getting, in a lot of cases, and based on a lot of research, you're getting more.
Okay. So, any upcoming changes in EPLT that you'd like to talk about before we close out?
Right now, we're in a bit of a quiet period because most of the summer programs are over. But we do have some cohort programs, Master of Education programs that are starting up again. So we'll be doing a lot of announcements and promotions for that in the fall.
And I understand you're doing some work on revamping the EPLT website too?
Yeah, that's in progress, and we hope to have that live soon, but I don't want to give you a date because we've pushed the date back a few times already. But yeah, it's a new website and also a new content management system, and our hope is and our belief is that it will be much easier to manage, and so we'll be able to provide very up-to-date information.
Well, that sounds excellent. I won't hold your feet to the fire then for a date. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me and to our listeners.
You're welcome.
Okay, so that was our interview segment, and now on to the discussion segment. A couple of weeks ago, we did a web conferencing orientation session for one of our MEd cohort programs, and after months of preparations trying to get that ready, I think it turned out pretty well. Sharon, you were intimately involved with that. How did that go?
It actually went really well. It's one of the first courses that we offer that has a hybrid learning environment, meaning there is a face-to-face instruction happening at the same time as students who will be participating online. And we made that happen by incorporating a web conferencing software. In our case, we're using Adobe Connect. Yeah, it went really well.
So because, you know, this particular cohort is a French immersion cohort, or that's the focus of it anyway, how does that hybrid format help with the language issue?
The hybrid format actually didn't help. It was a major challenge, to be honest, because normally for a language course, you really want to allow the students to be totally immersed in the language environment. So in this case, it's a French course, so we want the students to be listening, speaking, and writing and all that in the French language. So in a face-to-face environment, it's relatively easy. You know, you have a French instructor standing in front of the class, writing things on the board, and the students can be broken down to smaller groups and talk and discuss in French. But when you add the remote students, meaning the students online, into the mix, then it really makes it difficult, because how do you make sure that the students online are getting the same immersive experience as the students who are in the class, who have the teacher right in front of them? You know, you can just put up your hand and speak right away, and you can ask questions right away. So that was a real challenge. And so going back to the actual format of the course, we are using Adobe Connect, so it allows the students online to have a view, so a camera view of the instructor So you not only get the audio, you also get the body language, you get the facial expression, which is really important in the language course.
So it really, really helps with the immersion aspect of it compared to somebody taking just a regular online course or a correspondence.
Definitely. I really do think the web conferencing tool helped the online students tremendously. It really gave that all immersive environment. So in addition to the real-time audio and video, there's also a text chat area. So if the students want to just type in the question first without breaking the flow of the course, meaning they don't have to chime in when the instructor is still talking on a specific topic, so the student can just type in the question, and when there's a natural break in the flow of the course, then the instructor can look at the chat area and say, oh, student John, whoever who's joining us online, asked this question, and then the question could be answered then. And there's also the presentation area. That's where any content the instructor wants to show will be loaded. So in this course, it's usually PowerPoint slides. So for the students who are in the classroom, they will see the content project onto a projector screen in the classroom. And for the students who are participating using Adobe Connect, or they'll see the slides moving at the same time as the students who are in class are seeing the slides.
Okay. That sounds like an interesting way to take a course. So you mentioned that we're using Adobe Connect. What made you choose that?
Very good question. There are a lot of web conferencing tools out there. There is Wimba. That's actually the web conferencing tool that's most widely used at UBC. Some of our students who are listening to us right now might have used Wimba in some of their other courses. There's also some other commercially available web conferencing tool out there, but the reason why we chose Adobe Connect is mainly because of its subscription model, meaning we don't have to have the software hosted on the UBC server or to have it integrated into our course management system. So Adobe Connect is actually a very easy way for UPLT to get into the web conferencing format without getting too vested in one particular system. From the user's perspective, Adobe Connect is very user-friendly. It is completely web-based, so you don't have to download any software onto your computer other than Flash Player, which most of us have on our computer anyway. It's cross-platform. It has application sharing, has recording playback, meaning all the sessions we host through Adobe Connect will be archived, so students who are unable to make it to that one session will be able to click on the archive link and view it when they're available.
Yeah, it sounds like there is a lot of decision-making to be done as far as, you know, what type of tool to use. It ultimately landed you on Adobe Connect.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I remember some of your experiments and testing them out.
Yes.
Those were actually kind of fun. But when you're choosing a web conferencing tool, is there anything in particular you need to keep in mind from an administrative perspective? Stuff that you kept in mind when you decided on Adobe Connect?
Yeah, it's very different to choose an appropriate tool from an administrative point of view versus a user's point of view. Because from a user's point of view, you really want it to be easy to use, lots of features, and good audio and video quality. From the administrative point of view, there are lots more things to think about. You want to make sure that the tool you choose is cross-platform compatible. Do you want it to be open source? Do you want it to be integrated into your course management system? Do you need it to validate your users, meaning, you know, a single sign-in, the student signs into the course management system? Is it going to take them directly into the web conferencing tool or whatnot? Do you want your web conferencing tool to be accessible, meaning so for students who are using screen readers, are they going to be able to access the content? And keep in mind how many participants you can have in one session. Those are all the things an administrator need to keep in mind when choosing appropriate web conferencing tool.
And can you suggest some best practices for actually hosting a web conference? Like what procedures should you follow? You know, what things can you do to make sure that everything doesn't
Fall apart.
Fall apart.
Yes. And the only reason why I know that is because things have fallen apart a couple times.
Which is the purpose of testing.
Exactly. And I really have to say, you know, testing really is the most important thing. But for best practices, we've come across a few. One of the things that we found really useful is to have a table of content at the start of each session. So it gives a very clear pathway for the students who are joining us online, what to expect. And another thing we found really helpful is to open the session 10-15 minutes prior to the start of a session so that online participants have ample time to log in, go through the setup wizard, download any necessary software that they haven't installed their computer, and you know, just to make sure that their microphone and the video camera is working. And I guess one last thing is we also found it to be very helpful to have a moderator present at the session in addition to the presenter. So we found it was really helpful to have this moderator because then the presenter really only needs to focus on presenting, you know, focus on the content, focus on being the content expert, rather than have to worry about is the audio working, is the video working. So any sort of technical troubleshoot can be delegated to the moderator.
Actually, you read my mind on that one, since that was going to be my next question. I guess that just shows how important of an issue it is, though. Because instructors have enough on their plate just trying to get the information out to the students and, you know, doing their own presentation and everything. So to have them have to worry about, you know, technical issues and things like that. The moderator, like you mentioned earlier, about the students can type in questions, you know, in the text chat. Would the moderator then read them, or would the presenter actually have a computer up in the front too, and they can see the question?
Actually, this feature is present in a lot of other web conferencing tools as well, is you can have a private conversation and a public conversation. So, for instance, if I were a student online and I have a question, I only want to direct it to the moderator, then I can actually send a private text message to the moderator without it being seen by all the other students who are online and the instructor. But if I want to ask a question that's pertinent to the content of the course, then I want to make that text message viewable by everyone in the class.
Is it, in this day and age when, you know, everybody has a laptop, is it good, bad, or doesn't really matter if students who are actually in the class actually log into the session too and actually so they can, you know, see the online stuff too? Or
That's an interesting idea. The actual web conference session is projected onto the projector screen in the front.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So the students in class do actually see what the students online see.
Okay.
And the reason why we do want to incorporate that is we think it's important not only for the students online to see the instructor in class and to see the faces of the students who are in the face-to-face classroom. I think it's also important for the students who are in the classroom to see the faces of the students who are online.
Assuming that the online students actually have the picture on there. So, is there anything else to keep in mind about this sort of thing?
Well, really, first and foremost, testing. And I really learned this the hard way. Do not assume anything. So when you're testing something, test it in the format that you're going to use it. Meaning if you're going to have two speaker phones and two separate computers, set it up that way when you're testing. Don't just think, oh, you know, I'll just test the one computer and the one speaker phone, thinking that everything somehow is just going to magically work. So just test all the equipment, the software, in the exact same configuration that you're going to use in your real life session. And also to keep in mind your user's connection speed. So the web conferencing tools that are out there allow a fairly slow connection, actually. 56K is all you need to have a decent experience using a web conferencing tool. But, of course, the higher connection speed you have, the better audio and video you're going to get as a user. And finally, the hardware compatibility. This is something that really surprised us, meaning the development team who put this together. we really thought, you know, computers are computers, software is software, speakerphone is a speakerphone, microphone is a microphone, everything is just going to work together like a big, fat, happy, happy family. But no, there are issues. You know, the new Macs have the, I can't remember if it's a 4-pin or a 6-pin FireWire connection, and then if you want to use the old mini DV camcorder, it doesn't fit with the new FireWire. It's all these things you have to keep in mind. So if you can rent a hardware from either your school's computing media services department, if your budget allows, rent it from an audio video store out there, like a commercial audio video store out there. Really do that and make sure that the equipment is going to work with your configuration before you purchase the equipment.
It'll be interesting to see how that ends up working for the cohort itself, because the cohort starts in September. We did the orientation session with this web conferencing tool, so I'll be interested in hearing how the first course.
Yeah, me too. You know, the development team is actually going to be there the first couple days, and it's a full day session on Saturdays. So
overtime.
Wow. We just want it to work.
Well, hopefully, I mean, this is something that is going to become more and more prominent, I think, in education. As mm-hmm. one of the goals in our office is to be innovative in the way that we can present courses, and this is just another avenue of that.
Yeah.
Where we've gone online, we've gone taking it out into the school districts, and so this is just one more example. So it looks like we've reached the end of our first podcast, or the beta version, as I call it. But first, I'd like some announcements for EPLT, what's coming up. We're currently accepting applications for a Counseling Psychology M.Ed. cohort in Vancouver, with an application deadline of January 14th. And registration is open for the MET courses for both September and January. So MET students can register now, and if you're not a MET student, you can contact me if you're interested, and we might be able to help you. Some plugs, too, is you can find us online at our website is www.eplt.educ.ubc.ca, and you can find information on the cohort program there. And the MET website is www.met.ubc.ca. We'd love to hear from you if you're interested in taking that program. And we're also on Twitter, just twitter.com/ubcmet. And finally, we have our blog, which is at blogs.ubc.ca/eplt online. I've been trying to keep that up to date every day with new posts. I know followers of the blog might have noticed a long lag where there were no postings whatsoever, but we're now up and running and doing it regularly again. So subscribe and find out what's happening in EPLT. So that's the end. Thank you for listening to our inaugural beta podcast, and thank you to my talented co-host, Sharon Hu, for being my co-host and for being also the producer of this podcast. She'll be the one that actually makes it sound good, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And hope you have a good rest of the day, and we'll see you again in the fall. Music for this podcast, courtesy of The Pharaohs, from the song The Pharaohs Theme, through a Creative Commons license.